All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Front Row Material and Front Row Referee. My name is Mike Freeland. I'm typically joined by Christopher Butt. He lives in another country, and he unfortunately is not going to be with us this week on assignment. Look forward to seeing him on next week's show. But still joining us, the legendary referees from the world of wrestling, Nick Papa G, and the icon himself from the ECW arena, Jim Molyneux. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well. Doing well.
We are on the precipice of WrestleMania. It's coming up pretty quickly, and we were chatting a few minutes ago about how you guys are so bloody excited about the big upcoming events. So I know at the end of every show we talk about what's coming up next, but let me just ask you this question. This is kind of like the holiday season, if you will, for wrestling. Am I kind of correct on that one? Meaning it's kind of the season that just keeps on giving as far as bookings and interactions and whatnot?
If it's coming to your area, it was out of the area. Yeah. I don't think I'd be getting any bookings.
No, exactly. I'm not flying myself anywhere. I'm not one of those refs.
Not either.
So right now, we'll start off with Nick. Nick, so kind of walk me through the whole process of your upcoming week. So obviously Mania is on a Saturday and a Sunday. It's a two-night event.
Correct.
Which I'm going to talk about that as well, how we got to this point. But it ends up that the city that hosts WrestleMania, what nights do things really start cooking, or is it all throughout the week?
It's actually going to be starting in the area on Monday night in Williamstown, New Jersey, actually. H2O is actually bringing back Volume 5 of Monday Night Death, which is actually we used to have it every so often, a little bit last year. That's actually I believe that's going to be the first local show in the area, to my knowledge, unless there's some random schlub show in somewhere in Philly,
Philly.
You know, where a lot of murders happen or something like that. So hey, whatever. But it starts Monday night and literally will go until Sunday morning. I think Sunday night there's actually a show at 11:59 after night two goes off the air, I believe. So it literally goes. It's not just WWE doing their thing. I'm like, indie wrestling does its thing too on top of that. So, you know, the whole area will be invaded by wrestling fans. You know, bring the soap, please.
I love it. How many gigs do you currently have right now? And are you open and willing to, on the spot, if someone texts you and says, "Hey man, what you doing? Are you willing to open the old date book up some more?"
I got four at the moment right now. I got a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights. They're all at 8 o'clock. And then I got one at 6 o'clock on Friday. That's still actually up in the air, but it hasn't been, you know, confirmed yet. But yeah, but as long as, you know, you're not going to call me, you know, you're not going to message me an hour before a show or something like that. That date book's always open, really, but don't be a dick about it. You know, hey, I need you in 30 minutes. I'm like, well, you know, I live 35 minutes outside of Philly, so that's not happening.
Wow. So as long as they give you ample amount of time, there's still obviously a possibility.
Yeah, there's a lot of night shows that, you know, that people don't realize. I'm like, I know there's a show right after night one or Mania at like 11:59 on there. So same thing with Sunday night. You know, I just mentioned earlier, I know there's stuff there. I think there's stuff going against SmackDown. I know AEW's got Ring of Honor in town that Friday night for Supercard of Honor, I think it is, down in Temple University. So they got their thing. You know, the Collective, which is run by GCW, they got their thing going on. You know, that starts, I think, Thursday. They go to Thursday to Sunday. Oh no, they got a bunch of shows, you know, throughout the whole venue and stuff like that. So, and then there's all other small shows around the area. Yeah, I think
it always revolves around WrestleMania. It's not just a general festival of wrestling. Is there such thing, Jim, is a wrestling festival where they all just kind of come together in some random part of the country and everyone has shows? Or
there was the Peace Festival that they had in Los Angeles, what, 93 or something like that? I forget when it was.
It's kind of an oxymoron. Peace, Los Angeles.
Yeah, who I forget who put it together, but I know one of the matches was Conan against Jericho against Bigelow. I think Baba had something to do with it. You know, they brought different promotions together. And I think it was outdoors in Los Angeles. I might be wrong that it was outdoors, but I think it was Los Angeles.
It was
or
in
the
Compton
LA area.
Yeah, it was in Compton, I think.
Well, you might as well have.
You are hardcore. You are hardcore.
Yeah.
Take that. Might not be at the end of the night.
Take that bullet to the head.
Oh, God. So let me first throw this first question out to you guys. When it comes to WrestleMania, and obviously this is the prevailing theme here, what do you think led them to decide to go two nights? Like, what was the big thing? Because obviously, you know, wrestling historians know that it was normally a one-night thing. And if you go on Peacock or whatever, you're looking at maybe three and a half hours was the tops for most WrestleManias. And then all of a sudden it started to go to two nights. Do you think that had anything to do with Wrestle Kingdom? And do you think, or do you think in general, this was something that was being kicked around for a while?
I think it's more of a timing thing. I think, what was it, WrestleMania 35, the one up at Meadowlands in Jersey, they started at 7. I think they got over a little after 12, I believe. So that was like counting, if you want to count the pre-show, because I think they actually had pre-show matches, they had 7 hours of wrestling in one night. I'm like, it's how you burn your fans out. I'm like, that's where you get some of these indie-rific shows. I'm like, it was like, well, I'm going to have 13 matches on there. I'm like, well, your crowd's gonna be dead after 7 or maybe 8 at the most. You know, 9 is my limit, you know, for like matches on the show. There shouldn't be any more than 9 matches, you know, on the show. But you know, you're getting matches on Mania that were going, you know, they're like 14 matches, 15 matches, you know, and some of them were going 20, 25 minutes, you know, and stuff like that. I'm like, I know it's a culmination of a lot of the storylines, but you just can't have, you know, stuff like that happen. You know, it's just too long. I'm like, so I think that's where, you know, I think they're running the idea of 7 matches each night this year, you know, which is fine. But I'm like, you know, those 7 matches are going to be, you know, top quality matches at least. I'm like, they're going to, you know, you might have a little 8 to 10 minute match thrown in there, but most of them are going to be like, you know, 15 plus. You know, especially, you know, the main event, some of the main events will probably go 30 plus, I'd imagine. You know, sure. that's with entrances. But I think it's just more of a timing thing than anything.
Yeah. Jim, have you ever been a part of any type of wrestling extravaganza that's been multiple nights?
No, I don't think so. We did a show one time up in Trenton, New Jersey that almost became two shows in one night because there were so many people there. We managed to squeeze everybody into the CYO that night. But there were, I mean, we looked out the window because it was, the CYO was like in the middle of the block. It was like an old movie theater that had turned into a rec center. And we were looking out the window down the street, and there were people lined up outside. Like, the whole street got blocked off.
Wow.
And that's why they thought, well, let's do a 7 o'clock show, and then we'll get everybody out and do a 10 o'clock show. But they managed to squeeze everybody in. I don't know how, but we were famous for that.
If you were to do a 7 o'clock show and a 10 o'clock show, do you just repeat the show again?
I don't know what they had planned. That was something I thought about too. Probably could. It wouldn't be exactly the same match. The same matchups would work.
Right. So here's a question I have. So I was watching a little bit of wrestling here, and I want to say it was WrestleMania. And I don't remember which WrestleMania it was. So maybe you guys can help me here. After WrestleMania, The Undertaker and Bret Hart had a beef with each other backstage because evidently Bret's match went long. Therefore, it had to cut Kevin Nash's match. And obviously, timing is very important. And do you find that most people you work with, as far as the talent, take cues to know to stick to their time? And then do you guys have any stories about, oh my God, it just kept going no matter what we tried to do? So, Nick, let me start with you. Do you feel like most people take cues pretty well as far as, hey, guess what? We're, you know, we got to stick to a schedule here, in your experiences?
It depends on what kind of talent you're actually kind of dealing with. I'm like, usually a lot of the TV talent, I'm like, if there actually is cues and like the promoters, you know, adamant about like, hey, stick to your damn times, you know, that's, you know, that's one thing. I'm like, there's people out there. I'm like, I know I've dealt with so mostly predominantly like CCW than anything, where we try to actually work a TV style show than anything. I'm like, I think it was like a best of the best, which was like the junior heavyweight tournament back in the day. We did, I think the main event was like scheduled to go 15 to 18, you know, and we went like 27. So, you know, do the math on that one. You know, it's just, so yeah, some guys will, you know, will go with it. And then some guys will just don't give a flying fuck, really. Be honest with you. That's the best way of putting that.
Jim, as far as people sticking to their times, I mean, you did TV for a very, very long time, and you've been in the business, so did you find that most people in ECW were pretty professional to adhering to said times out of respect for their fellow coworkers, or was it on a situational basis?
You know, I think everybody pretty much did. We really didn't have times. Unless we were doing a pay-per-view, because our TV tapings weren't live, you know, our TV shows weren't live as opposed to a Raw or a SmackDown. So, you know, just, you know, do the match, and if they need to make time, creative editing, cut some of the match out, you know, while there's a commercial going on. So it's a little different that way. When you can pre-record a television show, you can play with it as much as you want. Which ECW was probably well known for creative editing when it came to that. But pretty much they, you know, stuck to times that, and I think Paul knew what times were good for everyone. Let's just say he knew that Taz would be good for, you know, 12 to 15 minutes. Taz and Sabu would be good for 12 to 15 minutes, where New Jack, you know, might, you know, crap out after 10 minutes because he's, you know, blown up from just, you know, boom, 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 go, go, go. So, you know, I think, you know, you also take into account, you know, what your talent can do and what they're comfortable with.
So that obviously plays a factor into how long they get as far as chemistry, how well they are, how audiences have previously responded to them and whatnot. So, okay. Nick, let me throw this one at you. Any stories you have where, God darn it, no matter what you do, these guys, these knuckleheads, they're not getting it. They're trying to live in their own world, and it pisses you off, and it's pissing some other people off in the process. Any unique stories about that?
It's more pissing off the office than anything else. It's not really pissing me off or anything like that. I'm like, you know, like there's only so much that I can do or something like that. I'm like, yeah, like I said, the one best of the best match, I think it was, I don't know, it was like Joey Janela in there. I'm like, me and Joey are fine with each other. I'm like, there's no heat with us or anything like that. But it was like we had the 15 to 18. I forget who I was working. I don't know if it was like him and Jonathan Grisham or something like that. And we had like 15 to 18, and they went like, you know, I'm getting time cues, and I'm like, it was like 25, 26 in. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what you guys want me to do. So they're still going. So I'm just letting them go. You know, there's nothing I can do in that aspect of things. So it is what it is. I'm like, I didn't care. I'm like, I'm doing my job on my end. So my office ain't getting pissed at me. So, you know, not like CCW at that time was on, you know, live TV or anything like that. We weren't even on stream. We know they would stream the building we were in. They'd stream it. It would be like a, streamed at that time, but then 24 hours later it'd be up online, you know, so it's like a, you know, almost like a tape delay type thing, you know, stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's about it, Roy. With everybody else will kind of stick to times that I work with, you know, everywhere else. Even in MLW when I was there, nobody really, you know, bullshitted us with times, you know, stuff like that. Even though like Corp Bauer might yell in my ear a lot with, oh, they gotta go to fuck home. I'm like, yeah, well, there's nothing I can do. You know, it's, you know, we have 16 matches on this freaking card. What do you want me to do?
16's pretty insane.
Yeah, that's when we're doing like 8 weeks of TV at that time.
Jim, let me ask you this. Had you ever heard, just in conversations between people, any jealousy about, you know, and I know everyone has their own genre, the way they do things, right? Their own recipe. Therefore, you know, Paul would base his time frame based upon how he felt that it fit their match. Anybody ever get miffed about not having more time, or anybody get miffed about something getting cut, or
yeah,
on a pay-per-view? Let's go pay-per-view, because TV, you know, you mentioned before, they did that really rough, hardcore editing with the TV crackles in between, and it worked. It was very grungy, but like on a pay-per-view, did anybody ever have an issue with, God darn it, you know, I this should have been more?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think when it came to the pay-per-views, the guys were pretty good with their times and got everything in within that time limit of their matches. They knew they were all pretty well paced. So, like I said, you know, everybody worked at a different pace, different style. So I think they, you know, Paul knew what fit where, but he was able to put the puzzle pieces together time-wise, you know, as per what they can do for their match.
I don't know if this makes any difference. Maybe you guys can correct me on this. I've always been kind of curious to find out. Or maybe it's the same for both. I don't know. When you talk about divas, and obviously you don't have to name any names, but you got the women wrestlers and then the male wrestlers. Are there equal amounts of quote-unquote divas, you know, wide receivers, if you will, wanting to, you know, have more time or whatnot? Have you ever noticed that, or is everybody pretty much kind of on the same page as far as promo time and whatnot? And the reason I bring it up is because let's give you a classic example. When CM Punk had to drop the AEW championship, he was given an entire segment, right? He went out there and he did his spiel. Now, when Thunder Rosa got injured, if you guys all remember this big ongoing kerfluffle, she was given a backstage, and I want to say it was either with Renee or somebody, or but it was no more than, I want to say, a minute or so. And, you know, she gave a tear felt, a heartfelt, you know, I can't, you know, continue to compete because of an injury. And then it came out that, I don't know if this is actual factual, but Tony said basically, it really kind of depends on who's a bigger draw, you know, when you're giving out a segment like this that's not a match. Do you feel like that's right as well? Or again, is it a situation of, I got to put my pieces where they're going to make the biggest impact as far as the ratings for that quarter hour?
Good question there, actually.
Yeah, I guess you really do have to worry about your ratings. Everybody, you know, pays attention to that quarter hour rating and you know, what's going on in each quarter. And you have to have something hot at the top of the hour. Cool it down, bring it up, bring the heat up a little bit. The bottom half of the hour, at least they used to, I don't know if they still do or not. And then back up to the top of the hour again, you know, get the sizzle going again. So I guess it's all placement and obviously there's, I hate to say this because I really love Thunder Rosa. I think she's great. But there is definitely a draw difference, especially if, you know, you're in the hometown, which, while CM Punk was at AEW, it seemed like AEW ran Chicago every other week. but yeah, you know, I guess it does depend on the draw and your stance in the ratings draw.
Another thing I wanted to kind of get your opinions on is when indie talent end up working and they start to build up a reputation for themselves. And the reason why I'm going into the story, and I won't name any names, but I've had people who've come to me and talked to me about this. Once they end up going on, let's say, not even a Dark or a Dark Elevation or whatever, let's say they're on a Rampage or Collision or Dynamite or whatever, and it's a squash match. And then they return to the indies, and they get some pretty consistent work. I mean, obviously, they're squash matches. Does anybody come back from TV with a little puffed out chest a little bit more, or is that just kind of the way things are? You're going to get called up, you know, to do different things. But does anybody ever get like that? Because I got a couple of people who definitely started to get a little too much of a swagger when they would return back to their indie shows, kind of touting, I'm on national TV now. I'm more of a big deal than when I was. Anything, I see the grins, there may be some stories here. Let's start out with Nick. Nick, does the head get inflated more than the Macy's Day Parade sometimes?
Yeah, it does. I'm like, there's a lot of people that don't realize, they forget where they come from. You know, that's one of the biggest things. I'm like, I can name a bunch of like people that, you know, remember where they come from and actually still acknowledge me. And I'm like, and there's people who I still talk, you know, to this day, and not on a regular basis, but I don't know if I need to reach out to them. You know, they're more than willing to actually, you know, talk to me and stuff like that. You know, even when I visited AEW, I think like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, you know, just backstage with bullshit and visiting friends. You know, I ran into MJF, you know, me and Max were cool, you know, stuff like that, dating back to when he was a CCW champion and stuff like that. You know, we talked for a couple minutes, you know, I know he was busy and stuff like that. So, you know, another one was, you know, Adam Cole. You know, two of these guys, I'm like, they realize, I'm like, they started out in the indies, but they remember where they came from, you know, so they're very, you know, they're very humble, you know, and stuff like that, you know, even doesn't matter where, you know, especially Cole is a little higher up with what, you know, with what MJF has done, you know, stuff like that. He's been all over the world, but they're, yeah, people like that, they remember where they came from. But, and then you get a couple other people, like you said, you know, get a squash match on TV wherever they're at. You know, they'll come back to the indies, you know, like, oh, Walt was on TV. I'm like, yeah, you had a 30-second squash match. You know, sorry. I'm like, yeah, that $250 paycheck that you probably got in the mail, you know, about 2 weeks after the fact, you know, doesn't really go a long way. So, sorry, you know. But, oh, yeah, there's I've dealt with many people, you know. It's sometimes I'm like, these have got to be put in their place, you know. So, you know, hopefully somebody stiffs them in the match or something.
Give them a little receipt for being
exactly
not having enough humble pie.
Yeah, just knock them back and check to realize. I'm like, yeah, you're back on the indies. So, you know, but you know, it's not us. You know, it's not us being called up or anything like that. It's basically us, you know, kind of reaching out to, you know, to get extra work. I'm like, you got to reach out to WWE and AEW and stuff like that. I'm like, they don't come calling you for extra work or anything like that. I'm like, you got to tell them that you're available for extra work, and then they'll reach out to you then if something opens up. You know, some people don't realize that process, but you know, it's neither here or there.
Jim, any inflated egos after they've made a couple appearances at other places, or
time them out, Jim?
No, you know, I can say that, you know, from ECW guys who went to WWE and WCW and came back to us, I really didn't feel that there was an ego issue, that, you know, especially if you were WCW, look at poor, you know, what poor Mikey went through at WCW. It was great for him. They never used him and he got paid every week, but he came back and was happy to be back because he was working again. He wanted to work. Although that time off did help him physically.
Yeah.
Mend. But yeah, no, I don't think anybody really came back to ECW with, hey, I was working for, you know, the big companies. Now you're back with us. So welcome back. No, I don't think that anyone came back like that.
You guys see so many talents, just the course of a week and a month and a year. You can feel free to name names on this one if you want to. Is there anybody who you look at, and I mean, you look at and you see, by God, this person, if given the opportunity, could definitely succeed. There's just something about them. And the name I'll bring up here that I've heard in a lot of circles, it's Darius Carter. I've heard a lot of things about Darius and how hardworking Darius is. Now, do I know Darius on a personal level? I don't. But when we did our interview, he stayed in character 100%. He made me call him sir. He dressed me down many, many times. Just charisma and what I've seen in matches, what he can do. He's a very talented young man. Do you feel like sometimes people just, I don't want to say just get lost in the shuffle and never getting that big break, but is there anybody who you see on these circuits that go, you know what, they should be getting looked at a little bit more?
I've got two. They're both H2O guys. Not to be biased or anything like that, but that's who I deal with on a regular basis. You know, one's Marcus Mathers. You know, kid just turned 21. You know, he's been wrestling God knows how long now. You know, I had his first match with his dad, you know, was it 4 years ago, whatever the hell it was, somewhere around there. You know, it's the kid's come a long way. You know, it's, I use that term loosely, kid. I'm like, it's scary. I'm like, he just turned 21. I'm like, he's been around wrestling all his life, just about, because I know, remember his dad super kicked him in the face one time, actually gave him a black eye on there. Like, I think in like 2014 or something like that, that happened. It was actually
nice.
It was actually hysterical.
Must have been fun coming out through the front door that day.
Yeah. Daddy stepped me in the ring.
Kids walk into his bed going, I'm going to give you a receipt, you son of a bitch.
Exactly.
His dad walks in first and announces, it's not as bad as it looks.
Yes. I was going to say, you got to get past the wife. Holy crap.
I know. He's signed up for a tour of Big Japan, actually, I think in May. I don't know what he's doing actually over there, but he's going international now over there. I know he's been in like Canada and stuff like that. And so, you know, he gets a nice exposure over there with Big Japan Pro Wrestling. So, you know, the second one is actually one of Jim's boys, you know, actually, I think it kind of transferred over from when Jim was training people back in his OTW days, Austin Luke, mm-hmm. you know, the same thing. Like the kid's only, I think 22, maybe. If that 21, maybe might be Marcus's age, you know, they both were working together in a MLW recently, a couple months ago in Philly, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, Austin's come a long way too. On top of that, for just, you know, he's been putting time in the gym. I'm like, he's beefed up, you know, same thing with Marcus and stuff like that. But they're probably the two of the biggest, you know, standouts, you know, not that H2O has, but at least on the indies, I'm like, Marcus is broken out, or he's all over the indies, you know, right now. But Austin's finally get over that little hump, so to speak. You know, with working with a lot of the other indies, with like Beyond Wrestling Open, whatever, you know, up there in the Northeast and stuff like that. You know, worked in MLW, like I said too. So he's finally getting a break now, as he deserves, you know, on there. But yeah, I don't think he's ever done anything with like AEW or anything like that. I don't think he ever did Dark or any of that stuff. So, you know, when Dark was around.
I'm trying to think, what is the name? God, this is embarrassing. I should know this name. What is the name of the kid? His father unfortunately passed away, but now his mom is with him in AEW. Blonde haired woman, good looking woman. He was all over the indies and he got signed, but he couldn't start.
Nick Wayne.
Did any of you guys have any interactions with Nick when he was going through the indies, or
he comes around with Marcus every now and then through H2O and stuff like that. He's probably a very, very humble kid, you know, on there. It's like, you know, it was funny because I forgot where he started at up in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm like, I was actually doing like referee critiques of like Aubrey and stuff like that. And I forgot that he worked with her. Something like, he's like, oh, do you have a thing for Aubrey? He's like, nah, I just don't like her work. Sorry. You know, I'm very open with that
not
stuff.
To name
I'm like, names. I name names. I don't lie. You know, tell me when I'm telling lies here. You know, it's, you know, I'm like, I'm very open with critiques and stuff like that. I'm like, if there's something, you know, some people just can't take it, you know, stuff like that. I don't mean any disarm by anything, but, you know, hey, I'm like, take a critique. That's what we're all, I'm like, you can't take a critique in wrestling. I'm like, get the hell out of the business. Sorry. That's someone whose fame that went to their head, all kidding aside.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard plenty on that topic. Yeah,
that's why I'm blocked on Twitter from her.
Jim, man, look at this. He's drinking the Sanka tonight. He's ready to go.
Yeah,
you want me to drop names?
I was going to say, that's with Tim Hortons.
Oh, Timmy H is nice.
Yeah.
Jim, what about you? I mean, I know it looks like you might have taken one of your names on your list, but anybody that you come across that you look at and say, you know what, man, gosh, somebody should have an eyeball on this individual, guy or gal.
I'll give you three. One who's had a bit of a break. It's Brian Johnson, who's a student of mine. He was in Ring of Honor, big in Ring of Honor during the pandemic time. Did all their TVs, worked a lot of people, moved to Baltimore, lived in hotels for weeks on end. So that's, you know, all you could do was go to the hotel, go to the matches, go back to your hotel room. And he did that for the Ring of Honor's run of the pandemic. Post-pandemic, and they shut down, and they brought, you know, they bought out by Tony. He didn't come back. I don't know why. He's great on the microphone. He's great in the ring. He does what Lawler says. Talk the people into the building, and then when you get them there, he's able to get them to come back by what he does in the ring.
Right. That's interesting.
And I'll be biased because he was one of my students.
He's very good.
He's very good. He works a lot for MCW right now, Maryland Championship Wrestling. And he does some indies other places too. A guy who had a brief look in MLW is Richard Holiday.
Yes.
I think he's really good. He's
back there now too.
Yeah, he's back out. You know, he had a little bit of a health setback. He's back in the ring. In fact, I think they just announced he's doing a show that I'm working May 4th. And I can't remember who they announced it's against, but it's a pretty decent match. I'll have to look at it. I'll let you know next week when we talk again. I think he's really good. I've worked with him a little bit, and he, at a level that he's at, he still says, "What did you think of my match?
Wow.
Was there anything I could switch?" Another guy who's gotten a little bit of a look at MLW again, is a guy by the name of Ray Jazz. And he's part of the new FBI with Guido. He's got an incredible amateur background. He's state champion. He coaches kids. Like I said, incredible amateur background, and it translates to the ring. He's a guy that I think you should watch out for. If you like a Guido Jr., he's very similar to Guido's style. And I think the show that I'm working on, WrestleMania weekend at the arena, there the FBI is going to be there, and he's part of the FBI that night.
Justice. So you had mentioned before that you're not really necessarily having scouts that come out. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I know WWE did at one point in time, because I remember in the early to mid 90s there were. At least they had some people that were going out there. I know Jim Ross would be out there sometimes looking at people. But nowadays it doesn't appear, maybe I'm wrong on that there's quote-unquote scouts that come around from different promotions, mainly for the fact that everything's online now. So if somebody hears a buzz about somebody, they can go ahead and watch something and then make a phone call to a promoter and say, you know, what's the deal with this person? Is it worth bringing them in? But when it comes to, you know, different people getting opportunities, you said that they are the ones that have to contact typically the other outfits to say, hey, can I get some extra work or whatnot? Do you find that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, meaning the person who continues to make these calls will end up eventually getting some opportunities, whether it's squash matches or not? Or do you feel like sometimes the offices can get a little tired of hearing from one person, or is there no such thing?
Well, if you look at, I'll use AEW for an example, actually. So, you know, a lot of their, I think in their talent department, Pat Buck was there. I think he's actually still there too, and he works backstage. Well, you know, if you don't know, Pat Buck works with a Creative Pro up in North Jersey on there. Well, where are a lot of these people coming from? You know, where's people like, you know, MJF came from?
Statlander.
You know, Statlander's another one. The list goes on and on. I'm like, that's where a lot of, you know, even when people used, you know, when Dark was around and Dark Elevation was around, you know, they used those 8-9 matches they do before the show. and stuff like that. All the talent's coming from, you know, coming from there when they're in the Northeast, you know, or at least down to our neck of the woods, you know, and stuff like that. Even when Pat Buck was working with WWE doing the talent relations office, he was booking the extras. Well, if you looked at it on TV, I'm like, who were a lot of the extras? You know, a lot of the extras were from Creative Pro. You know, so it's just a little favoritism in that aspect of things. You know, not so much really anymore now. I'm like, was, you know, there actually is a talent scout for WWE. It's actually Gabe Spokolsky, you know, okay. When there Gabe does work, he works alongside, you know, does a lot of, he does, you might see him, you know, flying around the country doing a lot of seminars. The seminars he does are basically his look, you know, looking for people, you know, stuff like that. That's actually like his little scouting thing. I'm like, I did one of his seminars before. His seminars are very, very informative. You know, I'm like, you know, people forget to realize, I'm like, Gabe was the one doing the fan cam stuff back in ECW. You know, he was under Heyman, you know, for how many years, Jim? Jeez, I think he was there as long as you were there, you know, stuff like that before, until like Ring of Honor started back in the day on there. So, yeah, so that's who's at least doing their scouting and stuff like that. So, you know, Gabe's got an eye for talent, obviously.
When it comes to people that are going through your indie promotions and you're working your matches, has anybody ever asked you, you know, Jim, what was your take on this guy? You've seen him in the ring for several times. Or Nick, you've seen this guy in the ring several times and you've talked to the people they've worked with. Did they ever ask you, because you're out there with them, what your thoughts are on X, Y, and Z person?
I tell you, the only time that ever happened to me was Dr. Death Steve Williams asked me about his opponent. He was doing a show locally, and he was wrestling Jimmy Snuka's son. He hadn't worked for WWE yet, and in fact, he had like a Spider-Man singlet. He was just, you know, that and, you know, amateur shoes. That's what he had. And Doc said, you know, what do you know about him? And I said, other than he's Jimmy's kid, that's all I know. Because Doc was worried about, you know, his look, how he would look, how Doc would look in the match against this kid that he knew nothing about, because he worried about going back to Japan. You know, if I don't want to screw up and look stupid, or let this kid make me look stupid. He didn't. It was a fine match. They, you know, everything came out fine. But he was worried about someone that he'd never worked with or never seen or heard about. That was the only time I've ever had that kind of situation.
Have you guys ever wanted to maybe be, and I know you enjoy what you do with refereeing, but would you ever want to be something else with inside the organization? Maybe, you know, them seeking more of your input on other things. I mean, maybe they do to some degree. Would you want to be a part of something more than just in ring?
Yeah, I'm glad to help out with talent, finding talent for events. I've suggested talents to various companies and promotions that, you know, hey, I saw this guy, I worked with this guy a couple of weeks ago, you should give him a look. And bring him in. He would fit against, you know, so and so. He would be a good challenge for your champion. Done that several times. I don't know if they've listened to me. I can't remember if they have or not.
What about you, Nick? Is there any potential aspirations? Let's say if you decide, you know, I've been around long enough and I've seen a lot of this stuff, and I don't necessarily want to get in the ring right now or again. Would you be open to filling other roles and other positions within the company that can continue to elevate, you know, talent in the company as well, and seeing them take the next step?
Every now and then, I might give input on a match that I'm doing and stuff like that, like doing more like agenting than anything else. But I'm like, it's more just the matches that I'm in specifically. You know, I'm like, if, you know, they would tell me, you know, verbatim how the match was going, like, well, you know, maybe we can tweak this a little bit, you know, like a, you know, like the finish and stuff like that, you know, maybe add one more false finish if we need to, just thinking, if we know the crowd's on their feet, add one more and then pop off with the finish and stuff like that. I don't mind doing stuff like that because a lot of the guys and guys and girls that I'm around them, month in and month out. So I know their movesets and I know how their character development is and stuff like that. So, I know what works around the area, especially if you're in South Jersey. I'm like, you're basically dealing with like a Philadelphia type crowd, and stuff like that. So I'm like, they're pretty ruthless every now and then, but I'm like, it's the same people almost month in and month out. So, what they like, you got to cater to your audience, with that aspect. I'm not saying like, hey, what if we do this? I'm like, no, nah, just bash around and have the light tube, that might work too, so.
So this kind of brings me to this next one. Getting some great, great topics here this week. So when it comes to evaluating somebody, and I'm going to pull this up here. I know Bret Hart said he evaluates a talent on a real basic scale. And I want to say he would say, at a 1 out of 5, what's someone's look? On a 1 out of 5, how do they perform in the ring? 1 out of 5, how's their promo skills? And I think there's another one. And I'm really sure what that one is. But let me ask you, with you seeing the talent that you guys do week in and week out, do you ever notice if they work specifically on other things outside of just their in-ring stuff? Do you guys see them working on the mic? Do you see them trying other aspects out to enhance their character and their abilities to be marketable? Or is that something that happens during the school, during obviously the course of the week, and then you guys are there at the shows?
Well, I think as far as the mic skills go, I think that tends to happen at the school, even at home. And the people who set up their own cameras and work on their own mic skills. I've seen people try different, try different approaches and say, hey, this isn't working for me. I've got to make some kind of change. And they'll do little things here and there. And I've even seen people come back, 2 months later with a completely different character. And it worked more than what they did, 2 months earlier.
What about you, Nick, as far as all of that? Do you get a chance to ever catch any of those things as far as the the practicing of the mic skills? We've heard a lot in like FCW or what became NXT that Dusty was a part, and they would have rotating people come in to work in classes for promo skills and being on the mic and whatnot. And you ever sat in on any of that stuff or seen anybody or see the evolution of somebody as they first come into a program as compared to where they are, after they've been in there for a while?
We used to do back before, I think maybe like year and a half ago, 2 years ago. It still had a thing called, it was every Monday night or every other Monday night. It was called Undiscovered, which is basically their student, their student shows, so to speak, which gave, gave his whole academy, we'd throw in some veterans in there just to help out, throw them in there with the match, get them ready in that aspect. But there were times on there that, Tremont would say, hey, cut a 2 minute promo. Here's your 3 bullet points and go. And we be off from there, but yeah, little stuff like that. I'm like, especially if they're more of the advanced ones, he would give them more promo time. He's not going to, if you're on your first live show or anything like that, he's not going to throw you the wolves in that aspect. He'd rather see a match first than before mic work. But, they still do it to this day. I'm like, they'll run a promo by me or something like that before a show. I'm like, here's what I'm going to say. Oh, tweak it like this instead, just little stuff like that. So it's not too often anymore because everybody else is, off doing their own little thing nowadays on there. So it's even like doing practice and mic skills. I'm like, it's almost come a lost art now.
No, I believe it. I believe that wholeheartedly. I want to show a clip here, and I want to get your opinions on this clip, and I want to know if you guys agree with this. Let's go ahead, and this is Inside the Ropes, which I find it to be very compelling. So let's take a look at this. Bret Hart talks on how he ranks talent. Let's take a listen.
You got to have the right look. And if you look at any wrestler that was a success, like from Hulk Hogan to Andre the Giant to Warrior to whoever was the top guy, they always had to have that a special look to them. Like when they walked in the room, it's like when Hulk Hogan walked in the room, you noticed like he was the biggest guy in the room. Or Andre or Bundy or whoever, you know, like it was just this presence about him. So look is a very big thing in wrestling, how you look. And the other thing is your promo skills, whether you can sell the product, whether you can sell your look. And then you have all these wrestlers that were great promo guys. And then you have the third category is actual wrestling ability, whether they're good wrestlers or good workers. And as an example, like someone like Hulk Hogan, he was like 10 out of 10 on his look, 10 out of 10 on his promos, 3 out of 10 on his wrestling. That's being generous. So you give Hulk Hogan like a 23. Someone like Steve Austin, you look at him, you go 9 out of 10 on his look, 10 out of 10 on his promo. His wrestling, you give him a 9 out of 10. Like he has a pretty high rating. You know, and then like Sean, you know, his look is like 9 out of 10. His promos were 7 out of 10. His work, 10 out of 10. So you get a very high ratio. In my case, I was, I got enough heat. But in my own case, I was probably a 6 out of 10 on my promos, maybe a 8 out of 10 on my look, or 7 out of 10 on my look. I never looked like Hulk Hogan or Warrior or any of these guys, but I looked enough of a part to at least work. I never felt that I was, I was too, like I had a good high enough number anyway, but I think my work was a 10 out of 10.
So what would you give Drew? What would you give Drew in those three?
I think he's got like a 9 out of 10 look. I would give him maybe from his, just because of the accent and stuff, you might give him a 6 out of 10 on his promos. And for his wrestling, I give him like a 9 out of 10. So it's pretty high up. Now WWF and all these guys, these geniuses in Connecticut, like they just overlooked all that when they let him go the first time. I was, when they let him go and didn't do anything with him, I was stunned. I always thought it has to be idiots. All the guys that I know that have hands-on control of the what's going on in wrestling in WWE are all guys that never drew any money. They really never drew any money. They're not big stars. The guys that are calling the shots are guys that never really made it in wrestling. They're always middle of the card. Well, I'm not talking about the rest. I'm not talking about the wrestlers. I'm talking about the guys that tell the wrestlers what to do. I think the wrestlers today are as good as, maybe better than the wrestlers have ever been. They're better athletes. They have a better schedule. They're more intelligent. I don't know that in all my years of being around Triple H, I never saw him come up with one idea for anything in a match ever. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's actually a genius and can figure out all kinds of things. But if they're going to hand the reins to Triple H, you may see the WWE slip way down, because I don't think Triple H has any ideas about anything. He only knows how to connive.
All right, so let's talk about this. It was a very informative 4 minutes. Gentlemen, would you both agree as far as at least the categories that he used? As far as, I believe, a look, promo, and in-ring ability. So I guess if each category is worth 10, obviously we do the math, it's 30 points. Would you agree with the evaluations of a Steve Austin, of a Hulk Hogan, of a Shawn Michaels? Obviously, he was very high on Drew McIntyre before they let him walk. But do you think those are fairly fair assessments, or do you feel like maybe not so much? Let's start with Nick here. Those three assessments, would you agree with them or disagree?
No, I'd agree with them. I'm like, they're kind of the three main things that we do, you know, in the business and stuff like that. I'm like, the, you know, what you see in the indies nowadays, I'm like, you know, people, you know, as far as like look, well, Well, a lot of people don't really hit the gym on the indies, so, you know, it's maybe, what, 70% of people are actually in somewhat passable shape, I'd say, on the indies. You know, it's male and female. You know, it's just, it literally includes everybody on there, I think. That's just me. You know, but I'm like, yeah, it's, but as far as the three go, I'm like, yeah, that's what we're kind of rated on, you know, so to speak. I'm like, obviously referees are not rated on that, but it's, but yeah, I'd agree with all three of them. Not really what he said about Triple H, but that's beside the point. That's just him being delusional.
Let's go to Jim here. Let's first start off on the first three, and then we'll get into the controversial one. Would you agree that he was spot on with all three evaluations?
Yeah, I would say so. I think another category that you could be looked at, and this is just on the purpose of business-wise, not the wrestler themselves, is the person a cancer in the locker room? Is it the guy? Is the guy a pain in the ass?
Good
How
point.
Much crap do I want to put up with from this guy? I think that's kind of important too. The one point I took away from it was he mentioned how the guys running the shows or telling the wrestlers what to do were middle card guys, and probably most of that's true. But one thing I would compare it to baseball. Look at all the majority of the managers that have been in baseball, and they're all guys who rode the bench, were, you know, didn't play every day, were able to watch and take in everything and keep that in their memory, and help them teach other, or, you know, place other players or strategize the game itself. I think guys like that can help a lot. Look at Rip Rogers. My God, look how many people he's responsible for getting to somewhere. So, you know, it's not always, I don't know if I'd want to go to the Hulk Hogan wrestling school compared to, you know, an Ohio Valley that's run by Al Snow.
Let's go ahead and let's start off with Nick here. You kind of touched upon the evaluations of Triple H. He talked about that. Do you feel, let me ask you this first, do you feel like the evaluation is based upon more personal sentiment or actual factual, you know, pertinent qualifications for the position?
I think it's more personal because he's probably still bitter about 97. You know, I still think he's going to literally take that to his grave, you know, on there. I literally just think that's all personal because I'm like, you know, what you see Triple H do, you know, literally all I'm going to do is just watch last night's Raw, you know, as far as like the end, last like 10 minutes, you know, that segment with the Rock and Cody and stuff like that. You know, that's literally all I'm going to do. I'm like, but you also, too, on top of that, like, you see the different camera angles they're doing. They're not, you know, they're not the Kevin Dunn type Kevin, you know, camera angles that we're all, you know, that we all probably have seizures from, you know, and stuff like that. On camera 1, 2, 4, 8, you know, oh, yeah, it's you're all over the place with that stuff. I'm like, that's one thing I'm like, they're not doing anymore on TV. Like, the whole landscape of TV has changed completely on there. Even the creative process too, on top of that. You know, I'd imagine, you know, every now and then they might have a little disagreement, but I'm like, there's no rip up of a script. You know, I'm like, oh, hey, we're gonna cancel Raw at 6:30. Oh, hey, by the way, I'm like, we're live at an hour and a half, guys. So, you know, and you gotta rewrite a 3-hour show just like that.
Right.
You know, it's insane. But I'm like, yeah, I just think that's more him just being personal and bitter from, you know, from screw job in Montreal.
We're going to talk about this an entire episode, and because it's such a controversial topic, was it a work? Was it a work? Now, here's why I say this. There's a lot of indicators that have pointed to it being a work, because Scott Hall has his theories, and I think Scott was a pretty level-headed guy when it came to certain things. I think he had an eye for things. Sean Waltman had his own take on the whole situation. So there's a lot of people's opinions, and we're going to get into a nice discussion on a future episode about work versus shoot, and kind of get into there, because when you look at it from the perspective of that was the launching pad for a lot of things, a lot of things happen right there. So anyway, let's kind of get back to the whole concept of producers being mid-card guys. So this is, and I hope this is somewhat accurate. It may be wrong, but let's see here. He was talking about people who are producers, you know, telling the guys how to put the match together. So these are WWEs, and I hope these are accurate, up to date. Billy Kidman, Chris Parks, Jamie Noble, Jason Jordan, Kenny Dykstra. Obviously, Michael Hayes is long time with the company. But then you have Molly Holly, Petey Williams, Robert Roode, Shane Helms, Sean Devari, which I don't know if he's still with him or not, and then TJ Wilson. The names that I feel like would be really, really good would be people like Molly Holly, Petey Williams, Robert Roode. From the simple fact that I know that they've done measurable things in the industry, and I would also throw in Chris Parks as well. Would you agree with of that list? Those seem to be the names of the guys that don't necessarily fit that category of, yeah, but they never drew. Yeah, but they were never big stars. These guys were stars, and very successful ones as well. Do you think that these guys, based upon maybe the people that you know them, or maybe even you who are familiar with them, are they right for that job?
Well, Chris's name kind of stood out to me because he was the only real big man that's been listed. So if you're going to have, let's just give me one of the smaller guys'
names. Jamie Noble.
Jamie Noble. Does Jamie Noble, should Jamie Noble be telling Gunther, you know, how his match should go?
Good point.
You know, should he be working with someone a little bit smaller? I think you need, you know, Michael Hayes would be good for working with Gunther because he's had the years experience of working against a big man. And you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say, maybe, you know, the Jamie Noble or you know, any of those guys can explain it to Gunther also. But I think you do need a big guy with experience to be able to pass it on. I mean, for years they had Jack Lanza, who was a pretty big, tall guy, big order, you know, who was able to work with the guys who were big, the JBLs, the Ron Simmonses, guys like that.
What do you think, Nick? Do you think that, I mean, I don't know. I just happen to feel like, and maybe some people are just better minds than they are getting over with the audience. Not to say that they aren't good creative minds, but maybe just being a talent just didn't work out. Maybe their gimmick just didn't go over with the audience. Maybe there was a lot of issues with creative that just didn't work out for them. It could be a myriad of things, but what are your thoughts on some of these names here as far as people who you feel like would be good, credible people to lead the current roster and the upcoming generations coming through?
You'd be surprised, I'm like, when you look at the names on there too, on top of that, some of the segments that they produced, and like, you know, I know Jason Jordan does a lot of stuff for Raw, you know, on there with a lot of like the big openings and this and that. And like, so he's actually the one responsible for him. Like, you know, I know TJ and Petey and Molly do a lot of the female talent, you know, a lot. And they're kind of the ones responsible for a lot of these, you know, five-star women's matches that you've seen in the past, you know, like a Rhea and Charlotte last year at Mania and stuff like that. And I think TJ and Petey are the ones that did that, you know, but I think it's more of them being creative, you know, and knowing what the talent can and cannot do, you know, knowing what the fans want out of, you know, certain things, you know, same thing with like, you know, knowing what their characters are, what they can and cannot do, basically. I don't really think, you know, as far as, you know, them being mid-card or anything like that has anything to do with it, really, to be honest with you. I'm like, as long as you're creative and have a mind for the business, I'm like, you know, I'm not saying anybody can do the job good. That's not the case on that by any means. But if you can't, you know, you can't handle the stress, that's for sure. But, you know, I think as long as you have, like, just be creative, I'm like, you can do the job.
Let me ask you this. We've often heard about people getting brought in for gigs, you know, tryout producer, or they're on an interim basis and they're waiting to see, you know, does this person really fit with us or whatnot? I wonder how that works out. You guys have any insight on as far as if somebody gets brought in for a quote unquote tryout as a producer, how they look at them or what they're hoping to see or grading criteria before they officially want to bring somebody on?
No, I have no idea what the process is. I just take a guess that, you know, they would bring them in for a couple of shows or a couple of weeks, I guess, worth of shows to have them kind of like shadow someone so they get the idea of what exactly how to approach the matches and things like that. And then have them work with someone. I wouldn't let them go off on their own and you know, hope that it works for TV. Maybe sure. Produce, you know, a dark match. Maybe they have them try that first. I don't know what the process is for either company. I can understand for AEW, you could have had them producing all of Dark.
Well, there was plenty of experience they there.
They don't need producers.
No. No, because they don't listen to them anyway.
Bang, I have stories about that as well.
Are we getting jittery? No.
So let's take a look at some of these guys. Arn Anderson, Chris Hero, which I know is a recent addition. Dean Malenko has been
Arn's gone.
But Arn is not officially with them in any capacity?
I don't think so. I think he's gone.
Okay. Jerry, Jimmy Jacobs. I'm not super familiar with Kevin Matthews. I'm not familiar with him.
Kevin Matthews is there.
Okay. Michael Nakazawa, again, I don't know if that is nepotism or if that's just a friend of a friend situation. I mean,
nah, he's part of the Young Bucks deal and stuff like that. He's from, yeah, so.
Okay. Sarah Shock, Scotty Tuhati, and then finally Tony Chimmel.
Fucking okay. Chimmel.
I didn't know he was there.
I know he was just backstage wise. I think he just he was there when I was visiting and stuff like that, and he was just bullshitting basically. I think he was just helping out backstage. I think he was just there. I think they found him in the truck.
I got a big pop from Jim.
Tony's great. I love Tony. Tony's
great. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, he would bullshit with us in WWE when we were doing extra work and stuff like that. So, you know, he'd help us out in the long run. So,
by the way, bring your friends on, both of you. If you guys want to bring somebody on to have a conversation as well with us, we'd love to talk to your friends as well and hear what their insights are.
So, I can bury them too.
Yeah,
let them bury themselves instead of us doing it.
Oh. All right,
we're keener.
Kevin Matthews, you mentioned him as one of the producers. He is with Creative Pro also.
Yeah, I think yeah.
And when you see the like three or four tours of Alaska, he puts those together. So yeah, he's got some experience with running things.
Let's go on to a topic I know is an issue. Let's just be honest here. It's a big glaring issue within the world of wrestling right now. And you guys can tell me, did this exist before, or has this always been here, or is this something that is just new? The younger talent. Really not wanting to take any coaches' advice or opinions or listen to people. Again, I don't have any knowledge or any anything. I am just getting the feeling through our show that tends to be an issue. Now, first, Jim, let me ask you. Has this always been a situation, or do you notice the prevalency of this is most – accurately in the most recent years?
No, I think it's always been a situation. However, in recent years, nobody does anything about it. In the past, You would have taken a young boy that doesn't want to listen, and he would have been put in the ring with someone who's going to beat the living shit out of them for 10 minutes. Then they listen. If you watch the biographies on A&E or whatever, whether it was Dark Side of the Ring, Bam Bam Bigelow got the living crap kicked out of him. Not that he wasn't listening, but they thought he felt he was fooling himself, which I don't think he was. Yeah, Scott's not like that. But, I mean, Andre the Giant beat the shit out of him in Madison Square Garden for 10 minutes. I've seen it before. Guys who smart mouth come in, try out, smart mouth, don't get what they want. And the next thing you know, they're doing a job on the show, but they're getting stretched by Taz or they're getting, you know, a trash can full of shit thrown at them by New Jack. And that's the way it was handled.
So the inmates basically handle the inmates.
Yeah. You know, the upper echelon of the mentally touched.
Jesus Christ. There's a cancelable effect right there.
Took care of the ones who won't listen.
I'll take some lithium, 2 doses.
You have to remember back, people always compare wrestling back in the day to being in the mafia. But of course, there's no such thing as the mafia. So we know that that's a bad example. But you know, that's the way things were handled. You know, the elite or the upper echelon of people handled things, and that was it. And they were humbled. Oh, you're humbled. Not like the Sheik would humble you. You'd be humbled.
We're gonna let the Sheik one go.
And you'd walk out of the building dragging your bag behind you with your head hung low.
Shamed. Yeah. Well, we've heard about this. Talk about A&E and biographies and whatnot. The aforementioned Hulk Hogan would say Hiro Matsuda. I mean, he beat the hell out of him. He beat the hell out of him, and he broke his leg, and then he broke his ankle. And there was a certain element of protecting the industry to make sure you didn't let just any Joe Blow in there, because this is everyone's livelihood. And if you're going to kill kayfabe, if you're going to smart off and act like you're a tough guy, well, then we're just going to beat the holy hell out of you, and you'll leave because you can't take it anymore. Nowadays, I feel like, and Mikey had talked about this before, wrestling schools pop up all the time, and you wonder who is qualified to actually be running these things. And he just said, you know, when picking a wrestling school, when he made his little PSA, do your research, do your homework, make phone calls, talk to veterans, shut your mouth, take notes. And he said, the more you open your ears and close your mouth, the more knowledge you'll end up getting. And I mean, I think he's spot on with that. But just wherever you plop down your money, be weary of what you're doing, because, you know, obviously some people can be, not all, but can be shysters. And is it going to be behooving you to spend your time and money and energy to do these things? Nick, let me kind of lead into this question here. And this is specifically to AEW, but we've seen this before. There isn't a whole lot of quote-unquote dupeing, if there is any at all. And it seems like, you know, when they talk about how long they've been wrestling, it's been a year, 2 years. Jerry was telling me at one conversation we had, it was at least 10 years before he started to feel comfortable. And he said, then I had so much to still learn after that. But do you feel like at the end of the day, it's a factory, it's a mass producing factory of where it's like, oh, this is the next person, let's bring them on in, instead of sending them down to somewhere else to allow them to cut their teeth and whatnot before you bring them on?
Well, it's like, it's basically best friends wrestling almost, so to speak. You know, if you want to point at AEW, I'm like, it's all the Young Bucks, basically friends at that time. You know, look who the Young Bucks brought in. They brought in, you know, Rick Knox, you know, big referee in PWG and stuff like that. You know, they brought in Bryce, you know, another referee from, you know, our area, you know, he was big friends with and stuff like that. And that's literally all it is anymore. It's just, it's all who you know. And it was just, that's all they want to do is like, well, you know, we're going to bring this person in. I think they'll be great for it. I'm like, no offense to Rick or Bryce, they have no TV refereeing experience.
Right.
You know, I'm like, if you guys follow Jimmy Corderas, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that, I'm like, he always constantly always, you know, criticizes, you know, the referees, referee stuff, because nobody pays attention to them. It's all, you know, it's such an easy fix to a lot of stuff, but they don't do it. But, you know, getting back to the, you know, the question at hand, I'm like, yeah, it's all friends. That's all that company's based off of. I'm like, don't get me wrong. I'm like, there's some talent, there's talent galore in the company, but you know, it's just all who you know. That's literally all it is. I'm like, Paul Turner's the only legitimate referee they got besides Mike Posey. You know, I'm like, they're the only two I actually respect, or be honest with you.
There's the one guy, I always forget his name, who was with Stephon? WWE for a while. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's another story for a different day. He's another one. I actually criticized him for working a GCW show. He's like, well, what are you working a GCW show for, doing death matches when you got a contract? He's like, well, I just wanted to know how it is to work death matches. No, that's the wrong answer. Yeah, I'm like, you're not experienced in doing death matches. That's a whole nother art for refereeing and stuff like that. Sure. Just like it's a whole art for the workers doing the death matches, you know, and stuff like that. That's the stuff that I can't stand. I'm like, basically, all you're doing is you're taking someone else's spot. That's all you're doing, you know. So that's my PSA for the night, you know.
No, I mean, but it makes sense though. It makes sense. Yeah. I mean, certain people have they're in a certain genre. They've mastered that genre. That's what they do. And then maybe someone coming in is going to take the spot of someone else who is a young boy, if you will, in refereeing, trying to learn that genre and trying to hone their craft. I don't besmirch anybody for wanting to maybe expand their knowledge on something, but maybe do it in a different way.
I have no issue with that. I'm like, it's just like, you know, I just want to experience what a death match is, you know, refereeing one. I'm like, no, absolutely not. I'm like, that's the worst thing, because all you're doing is putting the men and women that are doing these matches, you're putting their safety in jeopardy, because you don't know, you're not going to know how to react, you know, if something goes awry. And trust me, I know Jim and I have both been in the ring when that happens. It's not a pleasant experience. You know, you gotta act on split seconds, you know, on there. You know, and if you don't have that reaction time with, you know, with that, I'm like, yeah, bad things happen.
I remember what happened to, was it Cash Wheeler when they were at Daly's place? And this was a while ago, I guess. And I don't know exactly physically how this happened, but his arm got caught.
I think I know he got caught
in something, but he bled like a stuck pig. And from the stories that we are hearing now, if they hadn't reacted quickly, you can bleed out pretty fast.
Yeah. So, like, at least Doc Samson's right there. Thank God. You know, he's right there ringside. I'm like, the one thing that really pissed me off was the infamous, probably during the pandemic wrestling that they had down there with what happened to Alex Reynolds. He got knocked loopy, and he's like literally laying there. I'm like, he's not laying there for like, you know, 5 seconds. He's laying there for like another, what, 6 minutes, because they had a, you know, God forbid they had to finish the match, you know. And that's disgusting. I'm sorry.
Right.
You know.
So I think we're all in agreement that from a creative standpoint, Triple H does a very good job at what he does. With that being said, do you think if Triple H was in charge of AEW, we would see a completely, do you think he could make AEW something just astronomically huge because of the talent he has to work with?
He's working with the talent that's there now.
The talent that's there now, because I mean, yeah, no offense to the talent level in WWE. They have some, don't get me wrong. But I mean, when you have, it's a huge, huge pool of talent that AEW has. I mean, I don't know if you necessarily can go tit for tat across the rosters and say, okay, this guy matches with this guy, this guy with this guy. That's the one thing I will say. But do you think that he would do wonders with that company if he was in charge of it?
There are so many questions before you say yes or no. Does Tony Khan give him the ability to do whatever he needs to do to make it work?
In a hypothetical situation, he turns the reins over and says, you're in control of creative completely.
Okay. Then it's possible, because when he says, okay, this is what's happening with the Young Bucks, and they say no, he says, get your bags and get out.
Yeah.
That would be the first thing. Anybody else. I shouldn't just point out those guys. But anyone else who says, no, I'm not doing that. Let's say I'm not doing that for safety reason, I can absolutely understand that. Where it doesn't make sense to do that, how about if we try this? As opposed to, well, we're going to do this anyway. And Triple H says, no, let's use the situation with the automobile window that got Punk fired. That wouldn't have gotten into Punk's ear. That would have gone as far as Triple H, and he would have said, you're not doing it. And if they said, well, we're going to do it anyway, they would have been fired.
Yeah.
They would have been thrown through that glass window on the way out the back door.
Do you think in some ways you have to be that way? I mean, almost
yes.
Dictatorship in some ways, because if not, then the inmates will run you.
Absolutely. I don't know Tony Khan. I'd be happy to sit down and talk with him one day and get to know him. But I think he's letting the inmates run the asylum. I don't get it. And if you look at everybody's going to dispute the ratings, but if you look at the quarterly ratings and see who goes down and who's in charge and why, well, if your ratings go down when certain talent's in the ring, why do you keep bringing them back and
you replace them with somebody else? Yep.
And because they're the ones in charge, where Tony could say, hey, look, we're not getting, whatever you're doing isn't working. Look at our ratings. I dare him to show the ratings to someone. Even if
800,000.
Even if he sees them. I don't even know if he sees them. They might say, hey, Tony, here are the ratings for last week. He may not even look at them, for all I know. Maybe he's not concerned about the ratings. He's happy to see what his friends are doing.
Well, let me ask you this question. And we did talk about ratings in a prior episode and how that drives revenue. And revenue is basically your lifeblood. You have to have the money to come in to pay the talent to be able to do X, Y, and Z, to rent the buildings and whatnot. However, isn't it kind of, it's all relative, meaning 800,000 to 900,000, let's say. Why are we saying that's bad? Are we saying it's bad because we are in comparing them to, okay, who else is doing what we're doing? Oh, these guys are. You know, so is it a fair assessment to say, I'm going to look at ratings and I'm going to say their ratings aren't good because these guys over here are doing 2 million. Is that a fair comparison when you look at things?
I don't think you want to compare them to WWE or anything like that. You know, when you're doing the 800,000 to 900,000, I'm like, you're just getting the same fans every week. You know, you only cater to one group of fans. You know.
Could you say the same about WWE though? I don't know if they're necessarily harvesting any new people.
You know, it's almost the way they do TV different. You know, and I'll bring, just use an example is, you know, sometimes I'm like, just say if you watch SmackDown on Friday this week, well, usually, you know, 9 times out of 10, the beginning of the show, or at least in the middle of the show, you're getting a recap of what happened last week. Well, you don't really get that with AEW. You know, you don't go on Dynamite. I'm like, well, you know, this is, you know, flies back to last week. This is what happened. I'm like, you know, I don't know if they do that on Rampage, because, you know, I don't watch that. I'm usually half asleep by then, or at least out in the road, one or the other on Friday nights. But, you know, I'm like, that's like almost like a perfect example. I'm like, they don't really do recap videos. You know, they might do it. I'm like, oh, here's what happened last night at the pay-per-view, you know, or 2 nights ago at the pay-per-view, whenever it was, or something like that. They may do that, You know, I'm like, oh, here's what happened here, blah, 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 blah. You know, but, you know, a recap video is, you know, key, almost essential to, you know, even the indies do it too on top of that, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you know, so, you know, you're getting a random viewer, you know, turning into Wednesday night. You know, they want to watch AEW. I'm like, well, what's this guy do? What's his background? They don't do any kind of vignettes, you know, on characters. I'm like, I know WWE did one for Andrade when he was coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, he came back, you know, last night, but they ran, I think, 2-3 weeks of vignettes with him, you know, just to get people familiarize themselves or refamiliarize themselves with him, you know, since, you know, it's the same character, but, you know, it's, you know, people may have forgotten about him, you know, stuff like that. So it's little things like that that they don't do, which, you know, if you want to compare it to WWE, I'm like, that's where they flounder, you know, so to speak.
Here's the comparison I'd be afraid of.
Okay.
I'm Tony Khan at AEW, and I, you know, we're getting 800,000 every week. A TBS executive looks at the ratings for the week and sees that Wednesday night, for that 2-hour period, they did 800,000. Thursday night, they ran a rerun of a Captain America movie, and they drew 1.5 million on a regular basis. Like, it doesn't have to be Captain America every week, but they ran a movie the next night and drew more than the ratings were higher than for wrestling. So if I'm a TBS executive, well, why am I spending the money for wrestling every week when I can just throw a movie on and get higher ratings and it's cheaper? Because I have to worry about cost cutting.
I mean, it's a very good point. I mean, it's interesting. Why would a company decide to bring wrestling in to be part of their programming if they already currently have programming that outdraws that to begin with? Is it the thought that because it's live, they can start drawing more people in? It's the hope that, you know, if you got a movie on that most people have already seen, well, they already know kind of what's going on. They may click in and click off. But if it's wrestling, if it's a live show, maybe we can catch somebody, you know, from a spontaneity standpoint and get them to start talking. Does that sound like it could be a way to hook more people? Because I'm just floundering with understanding, how does a wrestling company get more people? How do they harvest more people? I know that a big one was they weren't letting the towns know before they came in what was going to happen. People didn't know. So people were in certain towns and didn't know that AEW was coming to their town. And I noticed recently they're doing more morning news shows, and they're doing some radio spots and whatnot, but and they're doing some outreach stuff as well. But
I don't understand that. Why would you not want people to know that you're coming to town?
Unless you watch their TV show. You have no idea. That little ticker that goes on the screen, you guys know what I'm talking about. That is the only way you know that somebody's coming in town, because I don't even know if people are going to the website as much. So how in the hell do you get word of mouth?
I've never been to their website.
What's that?
honestly, I don't think I can't remember the last time I was at the WWE website either.
Right.
But yeah, I don't understand why. Oh, we don't want people to know we're coming to town. My head would explode in the media. Why? You mean you don't want to sell tickets? That's revenue. You need to make some money. I know your family owns the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're used to people not being in the seats. But come on!
Wow, I tell you, this is good. This is good shit right here, kids. All right, we got you. Look at Jim. Jim's hot. Look at that look on his face. All right, here's a question for you guys.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Let me ask you this question: from the promotions that you guys normally have your home fan base, would you say for the most part you guys get the same crowd that comes in for the most part?
Give or take, depending on what type of show we're doing, yeah.
So how would an independent promotion, if we're going to compare it to maybe a larger scale, but the economics is kind of the same. How do I draw more people? How do I get more butts in seats? If we can quote Tony Schiavone. What do you do? I mean, because a lot of times, unless you have hardcore niche fans, not everybody's going to know about it. So what are these independent promotions doing to say, this is going to be our big show of the year? Did they do anything extra than papering the town and the local convenience stores and whatnot? Do you hear where you guys live radio spots about, hey, come on out and see our promotion? So what do they do that helps them grow?
Well, it's also bringing in big names too on top of that. You know, they'll do that. I'm like, you know, it's the funny thing, you know, just like what you see what Bloodsport's doing, you know, next Thursday. You know, that show was sold out in January sometime, and then they started announcing names. I'm like, oh, look, Shayna Baszler's here. You know, there's your name right there, and especially who she's going against too. You know, the fans demanded the match. I'm like, and Josh Barnett had to switch it around. Because Masha was actually already in another previous match on there. So they actually had to rearrange the whole card. You know, now it's Shayna versus Masha, you know, in that match. But, yeah, it's bringing in names. You know, and, you know, besides, obviously, you know, it's, you know, nowadays, besides, you know, people still old school. They'll still flyer, you know, the town and stuff like that. But, you know, that's what social media is for now. You know, I know Tremont would always have certain times, you know, different tweets will go out, you know, to fool around with the algorithm on Twitter, you know, it's, you know, just say 7 p.m. is the biggest spike, you know, for this genre or something like that. Well, that's when that tweet will go out then and stuff like that. So that's kind of like the new flyering almost, so to speak, on there. But some indie companies even have just their own specific social media team, you know, and that's it. You know, that's all they do is just social media and just promote.
Jim,
I think it depends on the promotion, how they approach it. I know one promotion I work for, they run the same building every other month. So, I mean, they flyer that town. Whereas opposed to another promotion that I work for, I don't think I've been in the same building. I've been with them for a year, and I don't think I've been in the same building yet. And so they do different towns. So they have to go out and flyer. They have to let, you know, the high school or whatever know. They do a lot of schools. So I don't know if there's a way. Schools are picky on certain things like that. I mean, you might be able to give an answer on this, Mike, is if I'm running an event at a school, will the school allow me to make enough flyers that the Wednesday before the show, every kid in their homeroom gets a flyer?
That's a good question.
Partially, and this guy usually ties in with a fundraiser somehow, so it's the soccer team or the football team.
Yes, that's a good
PTA
thing.
Or something like that. So there's a reason for the school to be trying to raise some money,
right?
Or to be, you know, hand the flyers out to get those people there.
I know we've held boxing matches at our school in the gymnasium. You know, and money goes to charities and whatnot and fundraisers. So I would also think that you would want it to be a product that you would not be embarrassed to have in your school, meaning the violence, cursing, this and that. If it's just pro wrestling, hey, that's cool, we got it. But it's one of those things where you don't want, it doesn't take long for word to get out. Oh my God, they had this, right? And the F-bombs were dropped, and we had, you know, kids that were there, and man, it was just a cluster. So I think that it's reputation of the company. It's being able to know that we can bring a family there and it can be a wrestling show. It's not going to offend people. And if it is legitimately going to be helping out maybe a school fundraiser or a charity, then I think they're definitely going to be open to it, opening to a partnership to it. But yeah, there's a lot of things that fall into that category as well.
Because a lot of times it's, you know, schools are like, ooh, wrestling.
Yes.
Below us.
I often thought that
facility.
Well, here's the thing. I really like the concept of this, and they did this during the pandemic, and maybe it worked financially or not, but Warrior Wrestling, they did stuff. I think the guy who either owns it or runs it is also the principal or assistant principal or athletic director or someone, and that's how he got to use the football field. And, you know, they would put the ring there, and they would set the chairs out around there and whatnot, and I guess a portion of it would go to back to the school, obviously, for using the stadium. But, you know, I think something like that could work out, again, as long as it falls within the confines of what's in the best interest of both parties.
Right.
I wanted to ask one more thing regarding, it was really good that you brought the blood sport thing up, guys. When indie promotions bring in a talent, is there any conversations about, hey man, I gotta win because I'm such and such, or, you know, any of that type of thing that happens? Because let's take the blood sport thing for example. I would look at it from a perspective of, yeah, WWE is willing to participate, but are they willing to have Shayna Baszler lose because of the optics? I mean, does that ever play a factor? You bring a guy in and this guy's like, I'm not going to lose because of where I've been or who I am, or anything to that nature. Is that a political chess game that is played all the time when someone gets brought in?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I'm like, I know back in the day, you know, the older version of TNA that would do that. Like some of their title holders, like to say, you know, to say, you know, Chris Sabin, he was the X Division champion. And he's working, you know, Joe Blow Indie Company or something like that. It's like, yeah, I gotta go over. You know, it's like the office doesn't want me losing, you know, to such and such. Oh, it happens all the time. Like it still happens to this day, you know, and stuff like that. You know, so it always will happen.
Yeah, if they're still working for a company like WWE or AEW, you have to kind of work with them. If they're, you know, fresh out of WWE and say, hey, I can't lose. Well, then they'll say, well, how about if we do a dusty finish?
Yeah, it's usually 9 times out of 10. That's usually what works. I'm like, we just do a double DQ, double count out deal, whatever, something like that.
When you bring someone in, you want them to be against your, to enhance or help, not actually enhance, but help your bigger talents.
Elevate them. Yep.
Right. So, you know, you put them against your champion, who you know you can have a good match with. But I'm not giving out my belt to, you know, former WWE superstar so and so, because I may never see it again.
Right.
On TV in the trash.
Yeah. And I may not want them back either. Especially if they give me an attitude like that.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like wrestling sometimes is nastier than corporate America. And I've been in corporate America Monday morning meetings, suit and tie in the glass boardroom. And I've been there on Friday afternoons when you think you're going to be going home and you want to plug your ears because what you're going to hear. But it seems like it's just as competitively politicized as really any other industry, probably, if not more.
That's why I'm glad to be just a referee again. I shouldn't say just a referee, but I'm glad to be a referee again. I don't have to worry about running the show and hitting people there and putting up with it, all kinds of, you know, headaches, you know, 18 headaches in the locker room, making sure there's pizza for the fans, or, you know, everything. I'm glad I'm reffing.
Jim, what was your craft services looking like here? Let's say you book Mike Freeland here. What am I talking about?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, my big money maker, the smartest move I ever made, what made me the most money in running shows, was the popcorn machine. An old school popcorn machine. You smelled the popcorn in the building. Everybody came a running for popcorn because they smelled it. And the old Teeny Jarrett trick, put a little extra salt in your popcorn so that way you sell a couple of extra sodas.
Yes. Love it.
But yeah, no, the popcorn and usually pizza. We did get a hot dog machine toward the end. Nah, it was all right. But you make a deal with the local pizza place. you know, you buy 10 pizzas from them and ask them to put the flyer, not only the flyer in the window of their place, but give them smaller flyers to put on their boxes to hand, when they hand out, when they do their deliveries, that's your street team.
That makes sense. Makes total sense. Guys, we've covered so much, and I greatly appreciate your time. We've gone way over this week, so I completely appreciate that. Let's go ahead and let's give the details again, because obviously WrestleMania is coming up again. If people want to go to shows so they can pre-plan, get tickets, all that kind of stuff. Start out with Nick Papachi. Nick, give us the rundown of where you're going to be at for WrestleMania weekend and where people can come to see you.
All right, it all starts this Monday night. It's Williamstown, New Jersey. It's H2O Monday Night Death Volume number 5, I believe, on there. That is Monday, 8 o'clock p.m., you know, live on IWTV. Tuesday night, you know, H2O returns with Hustle Cup 4, I think it is, something like that. It's our kind of our junior open class weight, you know, tournament we've been having lately. That starts 8 p.m., you know, live on IWTV also. Wednesday night, you can watch me be an asshole and be a heel referee and stuff like that. Get beat up by a bunch of women, which is always fun, especially to my wife. It's the Stan Styles Intergender Bonanza, where I represent the CWO as their personal referee on there. That is Creamania on there. I know the main event of that is... Marcus Mathers versus Effie, actually, for the Intergender Super Championship on there. That's also live on IWTV, 8 p.m. on there. So I get a break on Thursday. I'm actually taping another podcast for somebody else on there. So,
well, brother, you didn't know. Central consent
I'm
here, not man.
Contracted. I'm an independent contractor.
That's true. We have to stick to those. Yes.
Just a random podcast on there on that Thursday on there. Friday night, I'm supposed to be in Woodbury, New Jersey at 6 p.m. for the Wrestling Independent, which is a newer company that just started up in the Philadelphia area. They're actually part of one company. They're part of four companies actually putting on a show. Each company gets about an hour and a half to put on their top-notch talent matches. I think they're doing like three matches. They start at 6 p.m. on there, so I can actually get home in time, you know, at like by like 8 o'clock, which is actually phenomenal for a show. You know, and then I can roam around the streets of Philadelphia looking for work after that. and the sad part is probably it's Mania week. I could probably find some shit show to work at. So
now, if you have your referee shirt on, let's think about this. You got your ref shirt on, so you have a jacket on, and then you go into a venue. You could literally, both you guys could take it off, jump, go over the guardrail, and I don't think anybody would know any different because you guys are both recognized. Or was that, is that still a no no?
Oh, no, they think it'd be like a run-in or something like that. Who the hell knows?
I'm not jumping any guardrail.
No, I gotta get a chair. I gotta get a chair to get over it. Yeah. Who uses guardrails anymore? Where are they? What's a guardrail?
Jim, give me the details, the rundown of everything happening with you coming up.
Well, I start on Thursday. Thursday the 4th or the 5th, whatever that is.
I think it's the 4th. Yeah, 4th.
The 4th. I start that at the old ECW Arena, the 2300 Arena, for the WrestleCon folks, and that show is actually sold out. But if you want to see it, it'll be on High Spots Network. You can watch it there. And I know Rob Van Dam against Mike Bailey. Masato Tanaka against Jason Alexander. The FBI is going to be there. I'm trying to think who else they mentioned. They mentioned a couple other matches. I think there's like five matches announced. So I will be there doing something. I don't know what yet. Hopefully not a lie.
Wah, wah.
Hopefully there are five referees there.
Oh God!
If not, you're going the distance there, Jim.
Oh, good luck.
I'm home.
It'll it'll be the first test ride on the knee since being fixed. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, is that you could tweet at Nick and just say, "Hey, brother, what are you doing?"
Yeah, just text me. I'll come.
Be on standby.
Yeah, I'll have my gear ready. I'm jumping on my trampoline already.
Because you never know when my next match is going to be. It's been 40 years, but you never know.
When I'm my book, Gary.
Then the next day starts WrestleCon. I will be there all 3 days, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. are their hours. And Friday and Sunday, I will be there with Paul Richard, former ECW and WWF referee, and Saturday only. And it might be the only time we do this together, because I've been looking at schedules trying to figure some other conventions out, and we're not able to kind of sync up. But John Finnegan, ECW original, will be signing photos together. We do have a photo of the both of us that we will both sign, but we both have individual photos and cards and all that kind of stuff that will be there. So we'll be there all day those 3 days. Come and hang out and listen to us bus balls all day, because that's what we're better at than refereeing. And then Sunday afternoon is SPOW, Superpowers of Wrestling, in Burlington City, New Jersey. Their show starts at 2:30 in the afternoon, so you'll be able to get to WrestleMania in time on Sunday, because it's about a half hour away from the link. And their main event is for their heavyweight championship. Homicide's the champion. We'll be taking on Too Cold Scorpio. Also, you'll see the last match of Carnage Crew, because Mr. DeVito will be retiring. And two matches, really, before there's two parts to the event. The first two matches are outside in a cage for free. And then, if you enjoy those two, hopefully you'll pay your money to come inside for the rest of the event.
Nice.
But the Homicide Scorpio match is inside. If you go to spowrestling.com, you get more information on the event and how you can get tickets.
Nice. Excellent. And you know what? If you are a fan of times gone by, you remember the NWO, Hulkamania, what about the Bullet Club being too sweet? You can go ahead and check out all the different types of t-shirts, the comedy line of t-shirts over at TeePublic. Am I correct on that?
Correct.
TeePublic, go ahead and you can search Jim Molyneux, or you can also search, what are the keywords?
Extreme Referee.
Extreme Referee. They're good shirts. They're funny. You're going to love them. Get them, check them out before they're sold out. I do know they are going quickly, but they still do have some available. Check out the sizes for that as well. If you want to follow either one of our guys, you can follow Nick Papa G at Ref Nick Papa G. Oh, well, they got him perfectly. If you want to go ahead and follow Jim Molyneux, JMMOLINEAUX. Follow them on Twitter, which is now known as X. Wow, we've covered a lot of material. We've had fun. We've gone down memory road. We've shared some stories. We've had some laughs. Guys,
I buried people.
Did you say like old people?
I buried people. That's good.
Buried people. Oh,
I buried myself.
Love it.
It's a typical Tuesday night then.
If you guys enjoying this podcast, please let other wrestling fans know. You can find us anywhere fine podcasts are made available. You can also hit us up on social media. Let us know what you think about the show. We'd love to hear some feedback as well. For Jim Molyneux, for Nick Papa G, for Christopher Butt, we hope you're doing well, my friend. We can't wait to see you soon, so take care. I am Mike Freeland. We'll catch you next time on Front Row Material and Front Row Referee.